From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast. In a national election spread over so many phases, it's difficult to keep track of the many stories emerging from across the country. But one region that made headlines across the country is Kashmir, after the first phase of polling was held in the Union Territory on the 13th of May. Shakir Mir, who writes on Kashmir for TOI Plus, admits that a 38% turnout in the Srinagar parliamentary constituency may not seem like much, but it's a big deal in the erstwhile state, which has seen far lower turnouts in previous elections. He says a lot of the voting is due to anger against the cancellation of Article 370 in 2019, the article of the constitution which gave the region its special status. Polling is to be held in two other seats in Kashmir during two upcoming phases. While there is anger against the BJP, the party has not fielded a single candidate in the Kashmir region. Shakir says voters in Kashmir believe that was to avoid any losses, which in turn could get projected as a rejection of the 2019 policy decision by the BJP. In today's episode, my colleague Jairaj Singh and I are in conversation with Shakir Mir about what the higher-than-usual voting in Kashmir says about the political climate there. We spoke about why polls were boycotted earlier, the parties in the fray this time, and how voters are viewing them. We started by asking Shakir about the atmosphere in Srinagar during voting on Monday, the 13th of May. Shakir, could you start by talking about this election which was held in Srinagar on Monday, which is the first such election in Kashmir since the abrogation of Article 370. What was the atmosphere like for polling?
I think there was tremendous excitement, which is something I haven't seen in the previous two elections, of which I have a memory, 2014 and 2019. That is because these are the first elections that are taking place, first meaningful elections that are taking place post the abrogation of Article 317, 2019. So the previous ones that we had regarding the district development councils, because those councils do not have much powers beyond the smaller jurisdiction within the village or the rural areas. So they weren't really, and people weren't really enthused by those elections as such. But in this case, parliamentarians were being elected. There was a lot of anticipation and we were already expecting that there would be a high turnout, which has been there. The polling closed at 38% turnout, which is the highest since 1996. It is below average for the if we take the rest of the countries. But in Kashmir's context, that is a huge turnout because and that too in Srinagar, which has historically been prone to the boycott politics where people abstain from voting out of protest or out of their grievances or whatever misgivings they have. So in this case, 38% recording is unprecedented. And the last time we had seen as much tremendous brisk participation of people in the polling process was in 1996. That too in the midst of insurgency.
Shakir, can you actually describe this excitement that you mentioned? What were people saying and what was the mood exactly like?
So everywhere in Srinagar, as polling booths were being selected, people were excited. They were coming out of their homes in a run-up to the polling. They were inspecting the places. There was excitement among young boys who were the first-time voters who turned 18 a couple of years ago. They were assembling outside the voting stations. They were talking. They were discussing who to vote for, which party to vote for, whether or not they should vote, things like that. In downtown area in Srinagar, which is the hotbed of troublesome activities, you know, I spoke to some women who said they will vote for this time. They will go in the burqa, but they will nonetheless vote this time. People were telling me that this is the time and they will not want to waste their vote. You know, for the last 3 years, we have seen a sustained crackdown, you know, on political activities in the name of fighting insurgency or anti-national elements. So in that sense, people had become very subdued, even when they were trying to articulate. They would say that even if we say anything, we'll be arrested or branded as anti-national. We saw NIA raids, we saw SIA raids, we saw people being summoned to police stations for their past records. We saw stone pelters being arrested under the harsh laws like PSA. We saw older businessmen being raided by the state investigative agency, which is a nodal agency for the NIA, for their alleged attempts to fund insurgency or stone pelting in the past. So there was this broad-based crackdown that has brought this silence, which has like enforced a kind of silence across Kashmir. That's why we didn't see any kind of protest breaking out anywhere in any part of Kashmir over the last 3 years. So this was the first time when people could feel that, no, we could say some things freely.
the fact that these district development council elections have been held before and their creation and their functioning has been touted as, you know, a sort of success in terms of governance in the region. But how are these councils or DDCs viewed in the region?
It was a sort of a barometer to see how where people were gravitating towards. But we saw that in the DDC elections, the NC was the one to win the majority of the seats at that time. Even though the chairpersons baad mein jo hai, wo BJP ke bhi bane kuch. But overall, the large number of seats were won by the NC. So, usi time jo hai, it was clear ki who is commanding the influence right now. But at the basic level, it's about only DDC are only about, you know, people approaching them with their needs, individual needs, and DDC making some efforts, leveraging his association with this bureaucrat or that bureaucrat, this police officer and that police officer to help people with a particular case. That I spoke to one DDC of Pulwama a couple of months ago, and he told me that DDC is just a sort of grassroots thing. It just helps people. Maybe some villager does not have a fertilizer. Some villager has a pipeline running through his field and he wants it to be relocated. Things like these. So he told me that DDC can never be a genuine replacement of the electoral politics. That's why DDC could never fill this political vacuum which was there already. DDC was never meant to fill this vacuum. It is the optics of the BJP's, whatever narrative they had at the national level, that look, we have done the elections and everything.
Before this, Shankar, you'd mentioned that basically polling has already been held in Jammu earlier. What was the voting like there? I'm just trying to contrast between, say, Srinagar and Jammu.
All right, so Jammu voting is normal voting that we see in the rest of the country. There was nothing extraordinary in that. The voting was between 40-60%. People were registering their participation. The main contenders were the India Alliance and the BJP, the ruling party. There was a bit of this excitement in that key now BJP isn't going to have a cakewalk as it had expected. So that was a different part in the Jammu elections. In Kashmir, the dynamics are completely different. In Kashmir, the voting is driven by the fact that we will not allow BJP to have a share of power at this place. Everything that has happened in the last 3 years, the domicile rules that were amended that allow the non-locals to purchase land here or to apply for the local government jobs, you know, the mining rights, the mineral resource extraction rights, you know, in which the non-local bidders have participated. In Ladakh, there has been a sort of turmoil of its own. People are saying that, you know, too much outside influence is ruining our economy, our ecology. The same trends are there. So in Kashmir and Ladakh, it seems like the fight is between the BJP, the Modi government, and the local players. So it's clear the local players have an edge here.
You spoke about this boycott of elections that has existed for a while in Kashmir. Could you talk about why this boycott of elections has existed and why was it sort of disregarded this time?
So there is a historical context to the boycott politics in Kashmir. So Kashmir has always seen a very brisk, tremendous political participation from people across the board. Historically, if we see elections that have been happening since 1952, when the Constituent Assembly was convened. But what happened in 1987 elections, we saw that they were rigged in favor of the Congress and the National Conference coalition, because on the opposite side, we had a dozen of parties, all of whose agendas were pivoted on some kind of autonomy. They wanted to be part of the state assembly and then pass a resolution which could have either, you know, declared that Kashmir will become free at a certain point of time in future or pass a resolution on some kind of autonomy, which is much more than India was willing to give. So that kind of created apprehensions among the central government as well as its ally, which was the National Conference at that time. The rigging was not that extensive. It was only in the few pockets, but it really created that wave of disillusionment among Kashmiris, who then crossed over to the border into the Pakistani side and returned as insurgents. Since then, the political parties here, including the separatist leaders, have been time and again reaffirming that participating in the elections would amount to become a collaborator in this entire system, which in their view is unfair and unlawful in their perspective. So that's why boycott politics was always there. It was a sort of people trying to say that we don't want to be a part of your democracy or your state institutions. We just want a separate sovereignty for ourselves and we won't take part in your elections and we are boycotting the elections. And because separatist leaders had a greater degree of sway among Kashmiris in general, so boycott factor was always there whenever the elections were held. In 1996, however, we saw there wasn't as much boycott as there was previously in the 89 elections. But then the boycott factor again showed up in the subsequent elections like 2004, 2008, 2014, 2019 even, because in 2019, the Srinagar parliament elections recorded just 14% turnout, which is very low, extremely low.
You just mentioned that the separatists had a much greater sway earlier. Would then say the argument that this high turnout then effectively shows that, you know, the separatist movement has been ended in some ways. Would that be a valid thing to say then?
See, the situation here is so nuanced that it can't be like reduced to these black and white answers. When a newspaper recently interviewed Meerwaiz Umar Farooq, who is one of the last standing separatist leaders now, he seemed to have made a tacit approval of voting. He said that boycott will not work now. He said that the condition that Kashmir exists in, it doesn't make any sense to call for a boycott. Basically, he was responding because he was aware of the larger political circumstances that exist in Kashmir. So even he, at certain degree, looks to have approved that people should go and vote, even though he has not explicitly called for a boycott. I think what has happened is that BJP has changed the entire political landscape in the last 5 years, to the point that separatist politics as has existed before the 2019 will not work, because the crackdown that has intensified, it means either you will toe a different line which the government wants you, or you will find yourself in jail. So when you create these kind of conditions, so these separatist leaders will have to like devise a new mechanism which will like allow them to navigate very carefully.
Just ahead of the election, you had this Gupkar alliance, which was the PDP and NC, which were together, suddenly split just before the national election. You know, has that affected the chances of both those parties effectively, because they sort of cut into each other?
Yes, definitely. In fact, it is one of the what we often like to call as masterstroke by the BJP. What a lot of observers here are saying, including the senior ministers from the previous government who I spoke to while working on stories, they said that NC is definitely under some kind of pressure from the central government to withdraw, to make an alliance with the PDP. The reason NC gave for it is that Mehbooba came third on the previous Lok Sabha elections and therefore they don't think they could have made an alliance with her. That's a very poor argument, because the previous elections were held amid a boycott call. So South Kashmir did not register the kind of polling it would. That would have allowed us to actually measure what kind of support Mehbooba legitimately enjoys. So it clearly means that NC was inventing new pretexts while it was thinking about exiting from this alliance.
With the BJP not participating, you still have parties that are seen as sort of proxies. Like you said, you have the Apni party, you have the party led by Sajjad Lone. How are these parties viewed, and how is the fact that the BJP isn't contesting a single seat in Kashmir being viewed?
You know, these parties are not introducing themselves to Kashmiris as BJP proxies. They are introducing themselves by saying that they want to make a break from the dirty politics of the past. They are the new players on the ground. They are more attuned to the people's needs. And they will address them with more, because they have direct access to the center. They do make an implicit acknowledgement that they have some kind of relations with the central government. And they say that by having this, they have a direct line with the center, and they will help the Kashmiris more than these other parties who have been complicit in whatever ruin the Kashmiris are finding themselves in right now. So that messaging is very stronger than just saying that we have a BJP proxy. And also, they are saying that Umar Abdullah has already been a minister in the NDA in previously. National Conference and PDP have both made alliances with the Saffron Party at different points of their career. So what is wrong if we also do that? They have their own cadres, because previously they were all ministers in the part of the previous governments. They have their own cadres on the ground. They have their own vote banks on the ground. So they can easily mobilize them, saying that we have benefited you at one point of time. So return us the benefits by participating in elections and everything. So this way, they have been able successfully to cut into the large percentage of votes.
Do you feel that there has been a change in the way people see the older parties, considering that you have a very cynical electorate, which has always accused the mainstream parties of the state to have some collaboration or understanding with the center, which also got exposed post 370? How does this conundrum between proxies and old mainstream parties look for the voters?
When voting was taking place in Srinagar, and I did speak to people, you know, most of the people were clearly telling me that they will vote for NC. There was clearly a sort of a wave in favor of NC there. I could see that yesterday. But they were also saying at the same time, well, they disagree with these people. They framed the exercise of their electoral right in the binary of choosing lesser evil against the greater evil. That is how they framed their answers to me. So they know, they acknowledge that National Conference PDP themselves had not been, have been far from perfect, but they say that they will vote for them as opposed to the new parties that have been there on the ground. People do have a resentment, but they're also in a sense of despair. And in this kind of despair, they are willing to make a concession one more time, and but they are only willing to make this concession for the local parties who are championing the local cause and then championing the case of a return of Article 370 and everything. Now that there are no alternate leaderships like Hurriyat, they are practically powerless now. In this despair, in this mood of despair, they are willing to give these parties one more chance.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.